Welcome to the Informed Pregnancy and Parenting Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Elliot Berlin, and co-hosting with me today is Kristen Polacy, mother, wife, doula, and pre- and postnatal chiropractor.
Soon to be.
Soon to be. Almost there.
Yeah.
You're about to graduate.
Yes, December.
Oops. Yeah. Well, you're about to graduate. Pretty soon. And we're doing our before and after series where we sit down with someone who is expecting a child and finding out how things are going and how she is preparing for the birth, and then come back afterwards and find out how it all went. Our guest in the studio today is Shannon McGuire. She's a current lawyer, but former birth doula and very soon to be mama. She's a California native and currently lives and works right here in Los Angeles. Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Pleasure. I'm fascinated by you because you are a lawyer.
Yes.
You don't look like a lawyer. Do people say that?
You know, people actually do. And
I don't even know what a lawyer looks like.
Yeah, I think that's part of it is I don't know what a lawyer looks like. And now I've been doing it for a few years, but especially when I started and I looked, you know, several years younger than I do now, I think that that was a more frequent comment. But
But that's part of it. You look young. You look very young. And I don't know why you'd think lawyers would be older than that. But you also look friendly.
Yeah.
And the reputation for lawyers ain't that friendly.
I think that in a lot of ways, I have certain classic lawyer type A tendencies, and then in other ways, definitely don't have some of those. I think that there can be a certain zero-sum competitive nature to a lot of people who become lawyers, and I don't think that I was never an athlete. I'm not very competitive by nature. But I'm a transactional lawyer, too, so you're trying to make deals happen, so it's a little bit
easier to be.
It's not
courtroom drama.
Not usually, no. I mean, I do some pro bono in courtrooms, but that's the only time I end up there. So for the most part, you know, there is actually, it's interesting. I have coworkers who have a more aggressive approach, and sometimes I'll, like, hear them doing things, and, like, we'll be the same vintage, and I'll be like, do we have a different job? Like, I've never needed to yell at someone, like, in my life.
But it's, like, good cop, bad cop.
Yeah, I mean, but we'll be, yeah, I think that there's probably a mix. I do think that sometimes being friendlier, you get asked to do things that, I think being a woman too, sometimes you get asked to do things that people feel more comfortable making certain requests and having you do certain work that they probably wouldn't ask.
Yeah, so I think it would work to your advantage. Because if there was this TV show, like you had to pick out, well, the real whoever, Shannon McGuire, right? Please stand up. You know what I'm talking about? I forgot the name of it. You know, you have no idea what I'm talking about.
No.
I'm much older than both of you. Okay, so there was a TV show where basically a bunch of people, there was a profile of a person,
okay,
who they are, what they did.
Cool.
And then there's a bunch of people in front of the
celebrity
judges.
Them?
And you get to ask them some questions, and then they have to guess who the real one is.
Mm-hmm.
And then they say, well, the real Shannon McGuire, please stand up, right? So I don't even know how that's relevant here, but if I had to pick whether you were a doula or whether you were a lawyer,
you would pick doula.
Just based on looking at you, which could be totally wrong, I would pick doula.
Interesting. Yeah.
And I'd be right.
I mean, that's true. I think that you also look different just in my normal life. I definitely look way more doula. I have, you know, natural hair. Just the way I dress is much more, you know, funky. But in work life, I do think, like, I look more, like, you know, when you're in, like, business casual or, like,
you have
a
to
suit.
Dress the part.
Yeah, you look more like a lawyer. And I think people are more shocked in my world that I sort of inhabit now that I ever, like, they ever hear about my past life.
Birth work.
Yeah. And it's funny because if I ever run into people who knew me in my past life, they're like, I think some of them are pretty horrified by the turn of events.
Well, it's just that they don't seem like two jobs. Oh, yeah, I'm done. I was a birth doula. Now I'll just move right on to legal work.
Well, actually, I remember when I was, like, interviewing at firms, like when you're in law school, which you do right after your first year. And, you know, you're like, I have this resume. My resume, like, does not look like most people that sort of have, like, a typical law student resume. And so I remember trying to sort of, like, spin how being a doula was like being a lawyer and being an advocate and, like, different things. And in some ways,
It is.
I mean, you basically have a client and you try to listen to their needs and do what you can to facilitate them getting as close to what they want as possible.
That's really interesting.
And so I think that is. But actually, day to day, it is such a different skill set. And I've actually thought about this, you know, being pregnant in when you're a doula, so much of it is being intuitive and tapping in and just sort of like listening to sort of hearing someone on a deeper level and having that, you know, tuning into subtle things and being emotional and sort of like being part of that. And that is the opposite of my job now. It is like very literal and, you know, so it's
less fluid involved, I assume.
Yeah. Well, let's go back to,
like, what made you get into birth work in the first place? How old were you and what were you thinking, really?
So I grew up in a household that was like very open in terms of I probably when I was 4 years old could have told you what my father's vasectomy was like and been like discussed in detail. Like there was no I would have been three and been like vulva. Like there was
really?
So I definitely grew up in a household with my mom being very
hippie?
No, not really. My parents are not very hippie. I grew up in Orange County.
Okay.
And at the time growing up, my parents were more like conservative, but my mom's very loving and open.
Conservative kids don't say vulva.
That's true. Maybe? And let me just tell you that growing up, a lot of parents I think were like what my mother, Lisa McGuire, was like doing to her children. They were like, this is crazy. Like, you're way too open with.
Oh, yeah. Like, I remember when my daughter went to school and we got a phone call because she said, Pachina.
And they're like, no.
I'm like, what do you guys call it?
What is she supposed to use?
Yeah. So we grew up with I grew up with a lot of that. I was always really into, I think I've always been really into healing and different healing modalities since I was very little. And I don't really know where that came from other than just completely from within. And even as a little kid, this is so strange, but I loved animals. I was like a very gentle, sweet kid. And I really was into birth so that I remember being four and getting invited to a girl that was my babysitter. Like her horse was giving birth. And I went to like various animal births as a kid. And by the time I was just always very into it. I went to one of my cousin's births when I was about 12.
Wow.
But I sort of...
Again, this sounds more hippie upbringing than
I mean, it definitely... Conservative in some parts and really open in other parts. And I think my mother's very, like, accept you as you are, like, and whatever you're into. She's just, like, a very loving, open person. And so I was into, I think, all of these things. And then a few different things sort of happened. And, like, this is a weird part of the story is when I was 16 years old... This is actually, I don't want to go on a total tangent, but I actually dropped out of high school.
Oh.
And I, right at the same time that I dropped out of high school, I got a traffic citation for not stopping long enough at a stop sign. And I went to traffic school, and my traffic school teacher was a hypnotherapist. And I did not grow up in like alternative sort of medicine kind of household. But I naturally as a kid like wouldn't take medicine, was just very like interested in, I don't even know where that came from because that was not... like what really happened
Something
in my
was
house.
Going on around you.
But so I went to traffic school and this man, Bill Engel, was my traffic school teacher and he was a trained hypnotherapist and he was basically like, we'll make a deal. We'll do 45 minutes of traffic school. It was like when you have to go there all day and it's like, you know, 4 or 5 hours. And he's like, and the rest we'll do hypnosis.
And 5 hours of hypnosis?
It was like 4 or 5 hours of like learning about hypnosis and we could ask him questions and he was demonstrating things.
Okay.
And I had, you know, never been...
For your whole group?
For our whole group. I mean, it was like we were all asking him questions and he was talking to us about his practice, which I had, you know, I was 16 in Orange County. Like, I had never heard of this.
Of hypnosis?
No, I mean, I had heard of hypnosis, but more like from a, like...
Well, clinical.
Bar bat mitzvah, like not like a...
Oh, that kind of hypnotist.
Yeah, I never, like...
Make
I never
bark like a dog.
Yeah, uh-huh. I've never really heard about, like, you know, therapeutic... And hypnosis. And another thing happened around the same time, too, where I went to this Leadership Institute thing, which is its own whatever. And there was this group there from, I think, Iowa, and they were a group of transcendental meditators. And they came and talked to us about that. And that was also something I'd never been exposed to. And I remember sitting next to this girl I grew up with at this, like, meeting and her being like, this is so weird. And me being like, this is so amazing. Like, this is so, like, this is so cool. And I, in a weird way, I think that those two things, and then I left school and I was like, not sure exactly what path I was going to take. But in, I was like, I think I am going to be a hypnotist. I think I'm going to be a healer, which I think in a weird way I'd always sort of been interested in. But then things sort of evolved. I decided to take a slightly more practical course and ended up going to UC Berkeley and graduating with, you know, not hypnotherapy degrees. But
what did you study?
I studied peace and conflict studies and education.
Oh, wow. You're so all over.
Yeah.
I mean, sort of. I guess it's sort of all over, but in my – like the way I sort of see it is a lot of things are sort of similar. But even when I went there, by the time I went to Berkeley – So I graduated when I was young. I knew that before I graduated that I was I wanted to be a midwife and that was what I wanted to do. And it's interesting because I graduated in 2008 and it coincided with Ricky Lake's documentary,
The Business of Being Born.
And so it was funny because I remember, like, I'd spent a lot of time thinking about, like, how do you have an impact in the world that's, like, you know, meaningful? What are essential things in the world? If the world... And I thought a lot about, like, because I was, you know, really idealistic, like, teenager. And I really wanted to be, like, have a positive, you know, role in the world, which is funny now for my life and what I do.
Corporate law.
But, yeah, like, yes, at, like, a large, you know, international firm. But I really wanted to, I don't know, have this positive impact. I remember thinking, like, if the whole world fell apart, if, like, every system fell apart, like, what are really essential jobs? You know, we're always going to need carpenters. We're always going to – there's just certain things that, you know, you're always going to need. And I remember thinking that I wanted to have a job that was –
necessary.
Like, necessary and essential and, you know, part of a bigger fabric than just sort of some artificial, which, again, is hilarious with what I do now. But so I – had sort of decided I wanted to be a midwife and had different thoughts about how I was going to go about doing it. It wasn't that easy at the time to figure out a good path, in part because I say the Ricky Lake documentary, because I think in a lot of ways that was the most mainstream sort of thing that introduced other people to the concept of midwifery and doulas, other than sort of people who, like my boyfriend at the time, had actually been born at home and had a
Of course he was.
Right, because I was, like, living, you know, in the Bay Area with, like, people who had grown up in communes. And so,
do you have siblings?
I have an older brother.
Do you know what your births were like?
Actually, a lot. So part of the whole growing up with everything
open
being
house.
Open, like, I could have – I was also very into it. So my mom has a great memory, and I think growing up, hearing stories about her life and – when people sometimes don't know things about their parents, it really shocks me. So I'm like, of course I can tell you who my mom's third grade boyfriend was. Like, what do you mean? Like, but so I did know about my birth story and my brother's birth story, which both were not very positive.
Who came first?
So my brother came first, and she'd had an old school doctor who she describes as, like, the kind of doctor who wore, like, Gucci loafers. Mm. And he was from Pasadena.
Like Kristen.
All the time.
Yeah.
I mean, like, you know, I think that was just her way of describing him. He was just like an old school doctor. And with my brother, he actually, like, without her consent, sort of passed. She was a few days past her due date. He, like, did an exam and then broke her bag of waters while he was doing it, like, intentionally without consulting her.
Wow.
And then his birth, he ended up having, like, a vacuum and forceps, she had an epidural. But apparently she had a really nice nurse.
That's helpful.
Yeah. And for me, what I always knew about my birth was that my father really wanted to buy a television that day.
Wow.
And there was apparently a sale going on. So during several hours of my mother's labor, she was stuck trying to buy this television.
And oh, like they went to the store?
They went to the store and she was like in total labor. And she's like, I remember hearing, like, her talking about having, like, a notepad and, like, keeping tabs on her contractions and eventually they get the TV.
No apps yet.
Yeah, no apps yet. But she was, like, was her second child, and I think she was fairly far into labor.
But, I mean, did they at least get a good deal on that?
Yeah.
Okay.
That television. Do they still have the TV?
And you have to, this is, you know, television in the 80s, so it's, you know.
You know what that reminds me of? Will Smith, I once saw, I think it was him, he did an interview on a late show, and he started by saying, "Yeah, it's been a great week. We had our first baby, and also we got our first flat screen TV."
And oh, that's funny, because I actually, you know, I'm sure you probably know who Will Smith's children are. That's funny to like mark how old flat screen televisions are.
That's right.
By like Jaden Smith.
Exactly. And then, but he went on to say that the contrast, mm-hmm. which was, you know,
material.
He said when we left the store with the TV, they gave me this big giant manual, and it just talked about how to take care of the TV and give it longevity and make sure nothing bad happens to it. And with the kid, they were just like, "Here, good luck." You know,
so. Oh, so
you were sort of like a TV moment yourself.
Yeah, so I was television. Yeah, I should have.
TV baby.
TV baby. And I think my mom went to the hospital and was actually not there for very long before I was born, because she was fairly far. She had been laboring at, you know,
big Best Buy.
Yeah, Best Buy or whatever the, you know, equivalent was. And so she went into labor. She got there and they told her – she wanted an epidural. They told her she was too late. She apparently had a very unkind nurse.
Wow.
And then I was born very quickly. And I remember her telling me that it was, you know, a very painful, intense thing. And I think for her, she didn't see it as a positive experience. I think she preferred my brother's birth in part because I think she had a nicer nurse. And so I did grow up knowing about our birth stories, but somehow, yeah, and that was like totally part of the narrative of, you know, like asking about her pregnancies and different things. And she had, you know, fairly easy, straightforward pregnancies, except for she had some sort of like vein issue with me. And so I think that, but I mean, I think that in some ways what happens to your mother, if you know what happens to your mother, probably informs how you see your own kind of like fate with getting pregnant and, you know, delivery and all of those things.
Yeah, I would imagine so.
Yeah. But so I knew that was not, I don't know. It's funny. I think I was always more disturbed by those stories than she was.
Interesting.
But
what did your parents do?
My mom was a flight attendant.
Oh.
And then she stopped when we were pretty young. And my father was an entrepreneur. He was a real estate broker. He owned some gyms for a while, like, that he sold. And he mostly was, like, a real estate broker. And actually, mm-hmm. it was really fun as a kid, because sometimes he would get paid in, like, free dinners or, like he'd put in a restaurant.
Oh, yeah. So he had a little tab. You just walk in.
Yeah, and you'd, like, you get paid in, like, you know. We actually, one of the things, he did the local theater in our town. And so for like 10 years, we had unlimited free movies.
Oh, wow. That's
which was nice. Like incredible.
That's really a good perk for kids.
Especially
today, a movie's like $700.
I saw every movie that happened in the 90s. Yeah.
I could see two movies in a theater or build my own home theater.
And have better food.
So you, on your journey to midwifery, became a doula?
So, yeah, so I had sort of seen at the time that I decided I wanted to be a doula, which I don't remember exactly the moment where I was like, I remember learning what a midwife was, you know, long before knowing what a doula was, but sort of seeing becoming a doula as like the first step to sort of becoming a midwife. And again, it wasn't like super easy to access. And I was young. I mean, I was like 18, 19.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't grow, and I wasn't in a community where like, this was
doulas were happening.
Yeah, where I like, or I had someone that I met, and this is what they did. And I was,
were you
like,
still
oh.
here in Orange County?
No. I was up in the Bay Area.
Oh, the Bay Area.
So I was up in San Francisco for all of this, and so I started. I don't even know exactly. Like, I knew that I wanted to be a midwife. I knew that there were different like avenues to do that. I had moved to San Francisco after I graduated, and I was like right away started doing a doula training. I did it through like it was called Natural Resources, and it was this like birth resource in the Mission in San Francisco.
Were you the youngest person in your doula class?
Oh, actually, there was another young girl there, but she didn't end up finishing. But yeah, so we did a group, and it was taught by a woman named Abigail Reagan, who is the midwife who sort of ran our program. And then the program sort of, I did a secondary program basically through San Francisco General Hospital that UCSF is affiliated with.
Oh.
San Francisco General. So they do all their training for their midwifery program
there.
So you
did two doula
trainings. Sort of. I mean, the San Francisco General one was kind of amazing. Actually, it's a public county like hospital. And so it's a really interesting clientele, because when you start getting paying clients, it's like very much in contrast to most of the people that you're serving at San Francisco General who are all obviously not paying. Mm-hmm. I worked through a group, and this is all so long ago. This is like 9 years ago. So now I'm like even remembering things, and my life has changed so much. But
we worked through. I'd
say. Yeah. But we worked with one group where it was women who had been homeless, and they were staying in this like home facility in like the Haight-Ashbury. And they had to be drug tested regularly, and they were all pregnant, and they had all been homeless. And so we worked with women in that program. That was really interesting because there's a lot of different pieces involved in that, including child services and sort of how that sort of played in, because there's a lot of social workers involved, because a lot of them were getting drug tested, not just to stay in their program where they had to be to stay clean in order to stay there, but also. And that was sort of interesting, too, with even, like, administering, like, they couldn't take fentanyl or they couldn't take other things that would show up as positive.
Oh, during
labor.
Labor.
Wow.
Because if they would take narcotics, which are routinely offered during labor.
Correct. And that
then they get drug tested.
And if they didn't have, and actually it's interesting, nurses would offer them narcotics because they don't, you know, they're not necessarily knowing. And, you know, for a lot of these women who aren't necessarily very sophisticated, you know, it's an interesting thing, like, if they didn't have doulas, which obviously they always did when I was there. But I remember thinking, like, this would be a really – and almost all of them were, you know, alone. They didn't have family or partners or otherwise they probably wouldn't be in
the situation that they're in.
So that was like a – yeah.
That's intense.
I mean, it is an intense way to welcome to the birth world. Different than Beverly Hills, you know.
I also had Packheights moms who were, you know, willing and able to – pay, and that was a totally different experience.
So you got a big, broad spectrum in terms of your exposure.
Yes.
Did you like doula work?
I loved it. I mean, yeah, like I loved, but even since, it's funny, like I'm still on several doula groups that I was on before, like in San Francisco that I haven't, the last birth I had was August of 2010. So over, you know, it was August of 2010. And so it's been a while and I'm still on all these groups because I can't like I can't emotionally bring myself to like totally cut the cord, and I like to see them. I don't live like 400 miles away.
Last birth you had was 7 years ago.
Yeah, over 7 years ago.
And you're still on the doula boards?
I'm still on the doula boards.
Because you're interested?
No, I don't know if I'm on the boards. I'm on the emails where the chains go out and they'll be like,
oh, I see.
Woman looking for doula, you know, do XYZ date, you know.
Do you ever think about it?
Well, when I was in law school, I did. And it wasn't great when I was in law school because obviously birth is so unpredictable. And being on call actually was a really tough thing for me. I did love birth work. Being on call was tough for me.
I think it's hard for everybody.
I think especially if you're sort of a type A person.
Because you can't control
anything.
And also, like, I never actually used a backup. But I remember just living in – this actually is a lot like being a lawyer. Because you can't – I can't go to a yoga class without feeling like I need to have my phone. Because being not checking my phone for an hour is so stressful.
Right.
But I think that the thing that was hard about being a doula, being really young, is you can never be tired, hungover, sick. You sort of like you can never be away.
You're on all the time.
You're on all the time. And, you know, birth is so serious. You want to be the best you can be for this person. And so the idea that you're going to be like, I don't know. And
I'm a doula and my wife's a doula and we're always on call.
We've
been on
call
for years and we have four kids, but it makes vacation planning really hard.
Oh yeah.
So for winter break every year, like now the kids are getting older and we can't do it anymore. But as they'd be like, hey dad, we're going for winter break. And I'll be like, kids, sit down. We're going to El Segundo, California. It's a resort town with a large airport. And so, like, the next year, it's like, we're going to Redondo Beach.
Yeah. You can maybe go to Lake Arrowhead.
Yeah, you can't go too far because you're always on call. Yeah, I got to be able to
drive
back.
Well, you guys have two of you, too. So you
and
like
there's two of us.
Yeah, so that's, like, a double.
You have to plan vacation at least 9 months in advance.
Or, like, something I did, actually, when I was taking the LSAT. Which I did. So when I was applying to law school, it was fairly like late in the cycle because I kind of decided late to do it. And I was taking the LSAT. I can't remember the date. It might have been December 9th, but it was like sometime in December. And I remember scheduling to have no births for like 1 month because I was so worried about like not being able to. And it's funny because you always have backups, but I was so concerned about like.
Yeah, people don't really want your backup.
And that's the thing is they've agreed to, you know, be with you, not with. a backup.
And then you're not always 100% sure your backup is even going to be there when you want them. And, you know, so you just, there's no peace of mind. You can't plan anything.
Yeah.
Sometimes I'll fall asleep just for a nap after a long night of birth, and I come home and the kids are uppity. And so I'll fall asleep with my phone on mute, you know, for an hour, and I'll wake up panicky.
Yeah.
Like, oh, I wonder if the next person won. And you don't know. They can go early. They can go late. It's always right on time. But they can go long before the due date, after the due date, on the due date. You try to space out your clients, and then all of a sudden three are heating up at the same time. It's a tough thing to balance.
Except for then I became a lawyer, and that is exactly what my job is like now. And I literally wake up.
I was going to say one stress versus the next. It kind of is similar.
Well, let's
but
do
different.
This. We're going to take a quick commercial break, and we're going to come right back and find out how you went from doula to law. And then also, since you're having a kid pretty soon, we'll find out how, with especially your background, how you plan for your own birth. Join us in just a moment on the Informed Pregnancy Podcast. I understand the mental demands of motherhood. I see it every day in my practice. That's why I'm excited about Needed's new cognitive support. Unlike other supplements, it's specifically formulated with postpartum and breastfeeding moms in mind, using safe and effective ingredients. This means that moms can get the brain boost they deserve without compromising safety. Plus, it includes clinically studied ingredients, proven to support focus and memory. Hurry and get your cognitive support from Needed before you forget. Visit thisisneeded.com and use your code Berlin to get 20% off your initial order. This episode is sponsored by an innovative product that's made a big difference for parents and babies alike, Dr. Mom Butt Balm. As a parent of four, I've had my fair share of battles with diaper rash, often resorting to thick, unpleasant pastes. I only recently discovered Dr. Mom Butt Balm, and I was immediately impressed by its pleasant consistency and ease of application. This pediatric-approved skin protectant is free from dyes, preservatives, and zinc oxide, making it perfect for your baby's sensitive skin. It's designed by a doctor who's also a mom, ensuring your little one gets the gentlest care. A small dab is all it takes to soothe and protect, avoiding the mess and hassle of traditional treatments. With ingredients like dimethicone and petrolatum, Dr. Mom Butt Balm not only soothes, but also restores your baby's delicate skin. Available on Amazon.com and Walmart.com, it's the smart choice for every parent wanting to keep diaper rash at bay. Remember, with Dr. Mom Butt Balm, nothing comes between you and your baby, not even diaper rash. Welcome back to the Informed Pregnancy and Parenting Podcast. We're doing before and after. I'm your host, Dr. Elliot Berlin. Today, co-hosting with me is Kristen, and our guest is Shannon McGuire, currently a lawyer, but formerly a doula, and such an interesting, diverse background. I mean, you have really, I'm thinking about it, you have a very mixed conservative-liberal background, which in today's climate is really weird because it's like conservatives and liberals can't even be in the same state.
Although my parents have totally shifted from what it was like when I was growing up. For my mother, probably in the last probably like 12 years, and for my father, probably in the last like four. And so the climate of sort of growing up has changed. Also, I think that, you know, you have children and I think people sort of come into the world who they are, and you kind of like as their parent help to guide them and hopefully nurture their best qualities and, you know, help them cope with some of their like limitations. But I think that I feel like it's interesting. I think if you would have said to my mother 20 years ago and brought up the idea that I was going to have a home birth, she would have been like, this is insane. And now she's so, like, I think it, you...
She's into it?
Yeah, she's totally into it. And, like, I feel like everyone kind of grows.
Well, you let the cat
together.
Out of the bag.
Oh, sorry.
No, it's totally okay. Yeah. You're excited about it. And we are too. But before we get to that, how did you go from, I mean, your whole focus, your vision was midwifery and the stepping stone was doula work.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
When and how did you shift from that to law?
So I think there's a couple things. First, something that always really interested in me and birth work is I'm really interested in how people are controlled and how people get agency and have access to decisions and sort of, I think birth is a really interesting point to sort of specifically look at how women are able to make decisions and sort of how that kind of works together. And so I think that was something I've always been interested in, is how people have access to things and how we are able to make decisions for ourselves or think we're making decisions for ourselves or how we're controlled. So I went into birth with like really just like a combination of wanting to do something that I thought was good for the world, something that I just naturally was super, super drawn to. And then also something I was more, from a more intellectual standpoint, was interested in. And I think that kind of also drew me to law. And when I was doing birth work, it was, you know, 2008, 2009, 2010, and the economy was really bad. And I was like doing a lot of side jobs to subsidize this life.
Oh, and distance to, you mean doula work wasn't
paying the bills.
Glamorous.
Yeah. It's especially in the beginning, you know, where you're doing a lot of like low fee or no fee. Getting your experience. And it was really challenging. And so I remember thinking, oh, also, I had to go back and do some additional science classes that I hadn't finished undergrad to apply to
law school.
Law school.
No, not to apply to law school. No. To apply to like UCSF's midwifery program.
Oh, to get into the midwifery
program.
Yeah,
yeah. And I was like, part of me was I was just sort of like, this is such a long process. And it was kind of a struggle in a way, just where you're on this path and it's not that clear cut. And it's long and it was financially difficult to sort of sustain. And so I sort of decided that I was like, you know what? Like something that really drew me to birth work is I think it's like amazing how you can have such a huge impact on one person. Sort of per my mom's story, like, you know, a nurse who's not very good, you know, having a pretty like, you know, that can really affect someone. Or conversely,
yeah, it's really powerful.
Yeah, if you have a good person, more like for my brother, it can really make you feel like it was, you know, such a different experience. And I think birth can be really traumatic and stay with people for a long time. And that was something that, I don't know, the idea that you could help someone with that, this important point, hopefully. But obviously you can also, if you're not having a good day, maybe make some mistakes, just be a human. But so I was sort of thought that maybe if I went to law school, I'd be able to sort of be more useful for more people. So when I went to law school, I really was one of those people who went to law school not understanding how things worked. And I was like, I'm going to
change the world.
I'm going to help people. Which I suppose I help people of sorts, but not the way that I
imagined.
Yeah, not the way I imagined, which
it's not too late. but you said you do pro bono work too.
Yeah, I mean, our firm, yeah. We all do pro bono. I actually just finished an adoption.
An adoption.
Last week.
Oh, yeah. But, so you see there's still elements of helping people in that way.
Yeah, I mean, we do like asylum cases that are like, you know, like you help people and those are like meaningful. But for the most part, my job is, and it is helping people. It's just not helping people in the way that I thought I was going to be helping people.
But it is paying the bills like you thought.
Yes. And so. It's like an incredible, and I think that it's funny. Like, I think it's an empowering thing in a way that I think there's different seasons in life. And I think that being a professional person, which is something that I didn't see myself like when I was 16 or 12 or any, you know, I never really saw that as being a path. And I didn't really grow up with very many like professional people in my family. And so I remember my first like summer internship when you go to your firm and like standing and like you're like in this, you know, fancy like high rise giant building and you have your own office and you're like, you know, wearing a suit. And I remember being like, oh, my gosh, this is so wild. I can't believe this is like. I don't know. It wasn't what I had wanted, but I'm still sort of in a way proud of myself for having gotten there. And I think that it's fulfilling something in me that I didn't know that I needed, maybe fulfilled.
So is being a lawyer like it is in the movies? Like, was that something that brought you to wanting to be a lawyer? Or was it just more like, I mean, do you ever think about that? Is that something that crosses your mind or is it not?
Being a lawyer, it is so different than being in movies. And I think that generally whenever you see like glamorous people where you're like, so much of my job is so unglamorous. You have so many excruciatingly long hours. And I mean, I find it very challenging to, like, find time to, like, cut my hair. Like, I cannot imagine, like, when you see people on television, it's, I mean, I don't know, parts of it are glamorous, I suppose. And I actually, the type of law that I do is I do real estate and I work on hotel deals. And so the deal that I worked on all weekend is like a hotel that's like amazing. It's like a really, you know, sexy hotel that you were, if you were rich, maybe you'd go for your honeymoon.
Ooh.
But right, like I'm not there though. I'm like in my like pajamas in my house at 6 a.m. on like Saturday on a call, like turning documents the rest of the day. And like, you know, so it's a different, it depends, but it's a, yeah, it's an interesting twist.
Are there tools from your doula life that you bring into law?
I think I'm very, I think as a person, I'm very calm.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that part of being a good, I think part of being a good, I think there's different styles for birth. And I think different people bring different things. I think that something I brought was a lot of calm. And I think in most hectic situations, which at my job, there's hectic situations almost daily at some point. It's just sort of staying calm. And I think in some ways you preserve your energy better.
Mm-hmm.
And you just sort of like don't get caught up in it. And I also am able to, I think, compartmentalize in a way that some of my colleagues have a harder time with, where like at night people tell me they're like, I can't sleep, I'm too stressed.
Because they're
like,
thinking about
the case
or the work,
yeah,
or the deal.
And I'm like, I literally have never
you
had that
shut
happen.
It off.
I like, yes. I like close my eyes. I like.
That's an amazing talent, actually.
Yeah.
I'm the opposite because my background was in working in ambulances,
yes,
and emergency rooms. And so sometimes I'm at a birth, like I was at a birth recently with a midwife where things got really intense.
Oh, that's tough. Yeah.
And it was all okay, but
mm-hmm,
I stayed calm the whole time.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And the midwife kept checking on me afterwards. She's like, are you okay? Is everything okay?
Mm-hmm.
How are you feeling? Do you want to process? I'm like, I'm fine, you know, because I'm used to working with people during very intense situations in ambulance or emergency,
yeah,
like near death or death.
Right.
So, you know, birth, most of the things I say at birth, they're sometimes intense, but everything's okay. And you see that everything's going to be okay.
Mm-hmm.
And then when everything is okay,
mm-hmm,
I'm not going to lose a minute.
Mm-hmm. So I think that's, yeah, I think with birth, definitely not learned. I think I am calm. And then I think in deals, it's very much like being in an ambulance. And it's always life or death with these deals.
With the deals, yeah. At least it is to them.
Yeah. So. People pretend like it is,
yeah,
in this way that sometimes you literally have to tell yourself, you're like, no one is going to like lose a limb by
right,
me like not finishing this in the next 20 minutes. But I also, you know, you feel that. You feel like
the pressure's there, but
the pressure's there.
You.
But yeah, I mean, yeah, I feel like in general that's something that I've learned. And then, I don't know, I actually feel like I've lost some of my, or I've not lost, but I've sort of stamped out some of the things that used to, I think, made me a good doula, which I think maybe people who are my friends feel like I still have, but I definitely don't feel like I'm.
Like what kind of things?
I just feel like I'm not as, I feel like this is so crunchy. I feel like my heart's not as open in this way, and I feel like I'm not as intuitive as I used to be.
Hmm.
And I think that something that was really nice about being a doula, that's sort of like, I think why people like having dogs is like, it's this opportunity to just be like so loving, so kind, just like look at someone and be like, what is it that I can do for you in any way? And just sort of like, how can I serve you? And how can I like, I don't know, show you love in the way that you need it right now.
But I can imagine how that goes away. I mean, you're just in a totally different environment.
Right. So it's awkward when I try to show my clients or colleagues love.
Yeah,
no, yeah. Totally.
Yeah.
No, it's
not
totally,
like a,
yeah. It's very sterile. It's very serious. You know, it's very business. And I also think as a woman, something I've learned is that you really just need to be like, you know, to be taken seriously. There is a lot of like that.
Right. You can't, in the middle of a big negotiation, you can't take out some frankincense and just
be like, hey, take guys, a breath.
I actually do keep essential oils and various other things at my
for
office.
For you, but not for them.
So people come to me for one, hangovers or whatever, because I have like all the supplements. I have everything in my office. And yeah, people are like regularly walking and they're like, what's going on? And I'm like,
I'm in a day spa.
I'm stressed. Let's position.
Yeah.
All right. You're pregnant now.
Yes.
You're how many weeks?
I'm a little over 34.
So it's coming soon. You're getting close.
Yes.
How are you planning for your birth? You said you're planning to have a home birth.
I am planning to have a home birth. How am I planning? Well, it's actually funny. Like being a doula, I feel like has been useful in that I do not have enough time to do all the research I would want to do if I didn't know a lot about birth.
Mm-hmm.
Just sort of being like the kind of person who likes to
research.
Yeah, like a total like first of all, I'm like obsessed with researching generally, but also just like would want to know everything. And so
that's a helpful quality for a lawyer.
See, crossover. But yes. So I feel like in some ways I'm lucky in that I don't have to do that. I, in general, try to be – I feel like I try to eat really well as much as you can, although I do some like strange things too, even at work, where I think people think it's like, you know, I come in with like just random vegetables. I keep like gelatin powder next to my desk.
Gelatin powder for just some protein? Yeah.
Well, it's a lot of protein. It's also supposed to be good for joints and supposed to be, yeah.
So you're crunchy in the crunchy way.
Sort of, yeah. And then the other part of it is this interesting thing, more in the first beginning of pregnancy, where it's a really weird thing where you kind of are, first of all, not telling people you're pregnant. I was very sick. And then you're kind of pretending like you're not pregnant. And I think in some ways I had a harder time. I think I felt less tapped into my pregnancy early on than I thought that I would. I think that per my mom, she'd always sort of talked about like being pregnant with my brother and I and just feeling like very, I don't know, like knowing who we were like from
like, the very beginning.
From the very beginning. Hmm. And I didn't feel that. And so I think in some ways I felt like something was lacking, but also at the same time, like my days are just spent doing something that's so not, you know, so you're so not tapped into your body and so not tapped into being pregnant. And so much of it's even pretending like you're not pregnant.
Because you're trying to get stuff done. You have like
what do you have to pretend like you're not pregnant?
Well, I think
I hear that from actors sometimes whose part, you know, isn't written into the script.
I think that at a firm.
Is it not professional to be pregnant?
Or? Well, first of all, I didn't want my clients to know I was pregnant for a couple of reasons, but because you don't want people to not want you on their deals.
Oh, right.
Because then you might not be there, right?
You might not. People are worried about it. Mm-hmm. And a couple of my clients actually who I see in person know I'm pregnant now. And some of them,
you're still trying to hide your pregnancy?
Well, for the people that I work with that don't see me.
Really?
They don't know I'm pregnant.
Oh, because they don't see you.
Yeah, yeah. If I just work, like a lot of our clients are in New York.
Because
so.
I would never, you know, my mother always told me don't ever assume somebody's pregnant.
Oh, yeah. I had some amazing comments at work from people like early on.
That we're trying to figure it out?
That it just asked me if I was just, they're like,
just outright?
Gaining weight?
Yeah, just like, are you getting fat? Like,
right. Oh my God. But you're pretty tiny. So yeah. Did you start showing early?
Yes, I did. I started showing like really early, which is interesting because I gained about 15 pounds in my first trimester. And I've gained about 30 pounds, which is, you know, not insignificant.
Over two more trimesters with a lot more baby.
Yeah, but like, so it did for me, it happened like quickly. Literally like the minute I became pregnant.
First kid?
Yeah.
I gained 15 pounds in my first trimester.
Is that true?
Yeah.
Like,
people were around me were just asking if I was pregnant. I mean, my wife, but why did you choose home birth? Because as a doula, did you go to both?
Yeah, I went to both. I did, I don't know what to say other than I always, like, I've always thought that I can't even imagine not planning on doing a home birth. And I understand that, I, you know, in life you get dealt with whatever hand up cards you get and you play them the best you can. So obviously I could end up at the hospital. And so when people ask me where I'm delivering, I say, well, I'm planning on delivering at home because.
That's smart.
Yeah. Because even, you know, in the last few weeks, things could change. Different things could happen that beyond just like getting a transfer, which I hope doesn't happen. But
transferring during your home birth?
Yeah, during your home birth. But I don't know. I really trust my body. Actually, it's per the preparing thing. In some ways, I feel like I don't prepare properly because I work. Mm-hmm. All the time. And so people are like, you should try to walk 3 to 5 miles a day. And I'm like, I'm going to try to shower tomorrow.
Like, I hope that's good enough. Yeah.
But you can sort of walk in place in the shower.
Yeah. I mean, like, you know, I actually do sometimes. I'll like literally squat in the shower because I'm just like, oh, I should do something for my poor body. I see you know,
yeah.
Which has been positive. Although I got a birthing ball that I'm now sitting on at my office. But in general, I would say I feel really confident about giving birth, and a lot of my anxieties that I feel are more transferred towards caring for a newborn or recovering physically post-birth. Mm-hmm. So I don't know, like having a home birth just feels so like I don't feel anxious about it. I really like and trust my midwives.
It's interesting because you described your mother's two birth experiences.
Yes.
In the hospital, and obviously one was more empowering than the other, but neither, I mean, she wanted the intervention.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah.
And you don't want the intervention.
No. Yeah. I would be, you know, obviously things are whatever they are, but I hope that it, you know, I also, I feel like if everything is okay physically, I'll be fine. Like, I feel like I'll be okay as long as, you know.
Are you going to hire a doula?
I actually have not hired a doula yet. And we've talked about this because I've thought about having you as my doula. Because I'm sort of, you know, when you, different people have different ways of coping. And for me, it'd all be hard to know, you know, like you probably didn't know how you were going to labor. You thought you were going to labor one way and you labor another. And I think for me, I generally like am more, I'm kind of go inward. Like when I'm dealing with stress or pain or whatever, I'm not, like I don't call a friend with like a problem. People more do that.
You go inside and deal with it yourself.
So I kind of envision myself literally being in my bathroom by myself and just kind of like, I also have a husband who's, I think will be great. But I think that if I did have a doula, something that we've talked about is that something that's comforting for me is feeling like you're practically getting something done. So I think body work in a way feels like it's, and it's funny because like I obviously was a doula, but the idea, I'm not sure how I would feel.
Being doula'd. Yeah.
And that's totally like as a person, just generally, like I feel much more comfortable giving that than receiving that.
Yeah. I think it's two reasons why people use our service in general. One is because it's body work, mm-hmm. which is different than doula work. But number two, which from the way you're talking about it, is we come by the hour. Mm-hmm. So,
you're there for 3 or 4 hours and then you can.
Yeah, if you decide you're loving it, we stay for more hours. And if you decide you're not loving it, it's time to go and that's okay. But when your doula is contracted for your whole birth and then you realize this isn't working for me, it's really awkward to like cut them loose.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think that would be really tough. I also feel like the more people that are there, I mean, probably not like later, but I think I'll just be concerned about other people.
Oh, are you like a people pleaser? Like a take care of people? You're a giver.
I'm not like a people pleaser, I would say I'm not a people pleaser generally. I'm fairly comfortable kind of like.
That was the wrong term, but you're a giver. Like if people are in your home, you want to take care of them.
I worry about other people's being.
That's who you are by nature.
Yeah.
So if it was like long, you should be like, oh, they're probably tired.
Yeah, right. Like I think I'd feel guilty or like something that I've thought about is one of my midwives is a vegetarian and I'm like, I need to make sure that before like that everything we have like good vegetarian options stocked because if she's there and hungry.
You're so funny.
But like I thought about that where I'm like, oh no, because what happens if like what's in the like you know.
Is your husband like how is he preparing? Is he like on board with like is he as mellow as you are or is he a little
bit? He's very calm. He's like very easygoing and he grew up sort of similar to me in that like sort of conservative, sort of crunchy situation.
Interesting how you found each other.
Yeah. And I actually feel really lucky in some ways in that his sister has had 2 children with midwives at birth centers.
Oh, nice.
So I think in some ways that's paved this a little bit where like – and also he knew what I did before. It's not like, you know – I was a lawyer and I had never done this. And now I'm like, I want to have a home birth. And he's like, what? Mm-hmm. You know, he knew that like.
You got the doula background.
Yeah. And also he lives with me and I do weird crunchy stuff constantly. Like, this is just how we like.
This is your life.
This is my life.
This is who you are.
And so like, he knows that like, you know, we just don't use normal toothpaste, obviously. Like, because, you know, but.
So you're planning to labor at home.
Yes.
Midwife comes to you.
Yes.
You deliver at home. Are you planning on water?
I'm planning on having a tub. People are like, are you going to have a water birth? And I think the way that people think about a water birth is, you know, literally bringing the baby up in the tub.
Mm-hmm.
And that's like, I'm like, I don't know, wherever I am. Like, I think that I'll actually really like the water.
Do you like baths in general?
I am obsessed with baths. I literally work in the bath. It's like a fire hazard.
But not with your clients.
What? No. No. All on my computer.
Hashtag.
But I actually work like at night. I'll like get in the bath and I'll just like work on my computer. It is not safe.
Yeah.
No. With my computer like on a
I can see you doing that during your birth too. Hold on, I got a text. I got to close this.
Oh my gosh! People were talking to me the other day.
She doesn't know I'm pregnant.
I have to answer this.
Answer this
people
now.
People were talking to me about
contract,
like responding to email and stuff in labor, and I was like, that sounds terrible to me.
Yeah.
I am not going to be doing that. Like, I plan on, like...
Shutting it off.
Like, yeah. Like, that's... I'm not going to be checking my phone.
Are you working right up until the end?
The plan is to work right up until the end. And our maternity leave doesn't start until the day we give birth. So it kind of...
No kidding.
So I'll probably leave, like, a few days before my actual due date.
But it sounds like you do a lot of work from home. Do you go
into
the office every day?
Yeah. I'm just talking about, like,
your homework.
Yeah, I'm talking about at 5 a.m. or, like, you know, on the weekend.
Got it.
Yeah. or at night.
Yeah, at 5 a.m.
Because
our clients are in New York.
Working really.
Oh,
So that's there's actually been a lot of guilt about that with, like, being pregnant and, like, kind of being like, oh, I should take care of myself or I should, like, bond with my baby.
That's hard. It's a difficult balance.
Where you're like, oh, no, I know this is not good, especially in the beginning when I was so stressed. I was like, this cannot be good for my, like, poor child.
Yeah, or afterwards when you go back to work and you have a baby at home.
Yeah.
Ooh.
Yeah, that's what I said. The anxiety is post. It's not really labor.
So you've seen a lot of women go through labor.
Yeah, yeah.
I assume you've seen all sorts of medicated, unmedicated, hospital, home, vaginal,
yes.
Surgical.
Only one surgical, actually.
Because you don't get to go in too often. Or you just didn't have clients that had C-sections?
I didn't have very many clients that had C-sections, so that made it easy.
That's helpful.
Yeah.
Do you have a vision in your mind on what your own comfort measures will be? Because at home, you don't really get – there's no medical options for pain relief.
Yeah. So I think one of my fears is back labor because I feel like that – in general, I think I'm pretty good with pain management, especially if I don't think it's doing any sort of permanent harm. I'm sort of pretty good generally at
– you can surrender to intensity.
Mm-hmm. And so I'm not – and it's hard to say, you know, like it's so hard to know what you'll be like. So I feel like back labor from what I've seen and know sounds really challenging.
Well, Chris and I had back labor.
Yes.
Yeah.
It is challenging. I did my best.
So that's sort of a fear of mine is having back labor because I think that could be really, really hard. But in terms of comfort measures, I've thought about, I mean, like hopefully water. Like hopefully.
Being in water?
Being in water. Mm-hmm. I think they...
Do you have a playlist?
Yeah, I actually am working on one right now.
What
it's on my to-do list.
Calms you down?
So there's actually... It's actually right now I've sort of only started at like what would be like the beginning. And it's more sort of like... I don't know, sort of things that feel more moving because I'm sort of hoping that it'll help me go inward because I think that that's where I'd want to be.
That's where you want to go, yeah.
Yeah, so it's more songs that when you listen to them, they make you feel more like emotive.
Like what?
Oh, God, I don't even know. I should, like, look at my like...
On your...
They're like,
because afterwards you can share it with other people on Spotify.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
I feel like I'd be way too shy to do that. But I'll give you a link.
Okay.
Actually, I don't know if I will. I don't know how to do that. I'm not that tech savvy.
He'll, like, reorganize them for you.
Please. I actually... One of my best friends
I do parodies.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. Like, one of the things I do at labor, because I feel like...
Drunk levity.
Yeah, laughing. I feel like if you're laughing, your body knows you're not in terrible
distress.
Danger.
Yeah,
so sometimes if the setting is right, not everybody likes this kind of thing, I'll take whatever's on your playlist and sort of improv parody the lyrics for Labor and Delivery.
So if you're going to be there, I should send it to you in advance so you can get like...
No, it's much better when we do it on the spot. Much better, because we end up all doing it together.
One of my best girlfriends wants to be there, and I do not want her to be there. She's, like, a wonderful person. She's a very dramatic, like, not soothing presence.
Mm.
And so one of the things that I have sort of expressed to her that she could do that would be helpful is helping me work on...
On your playlist?
On my labor playlist.
Well, that's great.
I've also told her, I'm like, if you get to come at all, it is, like, immediately, like, when I'm, like, realize I'm actually in labor and we can, like, have a glass of wine and I'm going to, like, take a bath. Like,
and then go home.
And then you have to leave.
Okay.
Yeah.
What oils do you like?
So I actually... Can't smell.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So I cannot smell oils, but I still use them.
But you use them.
Correct.
Can you taste them?
Yes.
So some oils you can actually dilute and...
Yes. So what oils do I use? I use frankincense.
Were you born? I mean, we just glossed right over that.
Yeah.
You were born with no smell?
I wasn't born with no smell. I would call it the equivalent of having like bad eyesight and going blind. I was born with limited smell, and then it went away, and it was completely gone by the time I was about like 13, 14.
Wow. Do you miss it?
Actually, it's like interesting. I don't really think about it a lot. And for the most part, I've lived in places where like people are like, wow, it smells like people. When people talk about what it smells like, it's usually terrible.
Yeah, that's true.
Like I used to live in downtown LA and people
would smell that.
Yeah, it would just be like everything smells like piss. So for the most part, I don't. However, something I used to think about a lot as a doula is Abigail Reagan, the woman who trained us, would talk about the smells of birth and how you can sometimes tell when things are progressing by the smell.
Yeah.
And I remember thinking, like, this is a sense that I don't have. So there's a couple things with that. Like, and then additionally, caring for an infant, one, like the bonding element of just not knowing what my child's going to smell like makes me sad.
Yeah.
And then two, the sort of like literally not being able to smell a dirty diaper or things like that make me, I mean, I wouldn't say I miss smell. It's not that big of a deal. I think if you're losing a sense, it's definitely the one that I would pick.
Right, sure.
But there are certain things with this in particular where I'm like, oh, it'll be interesting that, like, if I am trying to figure out if something's pee or amniotic fluid, like, I'm not going to be able to smell it.
Well, you won't be able to smell it. Do you compensate for it in other senses? Do you have, like, super taste or?
I do think I compensate through it with other senses, yeah.
Because I'm face blind, but right. I'm very sensitive to voice and laughter and mannerisms in ways that other people generally aren't.
Mm-hmm.
Because, I mean, you seem like a great person. You can't smell the milk, but for some reason, everybody's like, taste it. Tell me if it's sour. But you'd be like the best person to taste the milk. And
I actually feel like there have been parts in pregnancy that I was pretty, like threw up quite a bit during my first trimester and felt very nauseous for pretty extended period of time, and I had zero food aversions, and I feel like one of the reasons I had zero food aversions was because I can't smell.
Right.
And I actually wondered if when I was pregnant, something I've thought about is like, oh, I wonder if when I'm pregnant I'll be able to smell it all. Like, I wonder if anything will come back just because, you know,
yeah.
so many
yeah.
people are like bloodhounds. Nothing. But I feel like in actually being pregnant, it's probably been nice because I didn't have any like triggering things where like something would smell bad and you'd be like, oh, I feel sick or, you know, and even when you get sick, like you can't smell. So I don't know. I think there are pros and cons.
Yeah.
Well,
you're cheerful about it.
Yeah. I mean,
it's kind of like what you said. If something had to go.
Yeah. It's not that. Yeah.
Word pick.
I don't know. But in terms of essential oils, I still use them because I still believe that on some level I'm receiving them.
Sure. They're not just about the smell.
Right. Yeah. It's about just like, yeah,
they
like
have
literally.
Chemical properties mm-hmm. that are helpful to us.
Right. So that's sort
like
of.
They're helpful to the plant from which they come.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, yeah, I love how open you are. And gosh, it's funny how you said that being a doula and being a lawyer have similarities that at first it just sounds like I was a pet groomer and now I'm a dentist, but they really are similar in a lot of ways, and there's so much complexity to you. I really appreciate your coming and sharing your personal life and your journey with us, and I'm very excited to bring you back afterwards and
see
how it all went.
I know. I'm excited to see how it went, too.
It's coming fast.
Thank you. And Kristen, thanks for being here again. It's always great to work with you. And at home, thanks for listening to the Informed Pregnancy and Parenting Podcast. Go to YouTube and check out our other program. It's called The Real Midwives of Los Angeles. And it's also a lot of fun. And then while you're at it, check out our website where you can find our blog, documentaries, and other pregnancy and parenting resources. It's informedpregnancy.com.
Doctor, doctor, give me the news. I got a whole lot of questions for you. This kid's gonna test my will. I got a lot to learn in my brain.
This episode is sponsored by an innovative product that's made a big difference for parents and babies alike, Dr. Mom Butt Balm. As a parent of four, I've had my fair share of battles with diaper rash, often resorting to thick, unpleasant pastes. I only recently discovered Dr. Mom Butt Balm, and I was immediately impressed by its pleasant consistency and ease of application. This pediatric-approved skin protectant is free from dyes, preservatives, and zinc oxide, making it perfect for your baby's sensitive skin. It's designed by a doctor who's also a mom, ensuring your little one gets the gentlest care. A small dab is all it takes to soothe and protect, avoiding the mess and hassle of traditional treatments. With ingredients like dimethicone and petrolatum, Dr. Mom Butt Balm not only soothes, but also restores your baby's delicate skin. Available on Amazon.com and Walmart.com, it's the smart choice for every parent wanting to keep diaper rash at bay. Remember, with Dr. Mom Butt Balm, nothing comes between you and your baby, not even diaper rash.